Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Ron Coomer on deck.
And Ronnie's been red hot. He's been in his zone.
Ron Coomer.
Let's see if the Cubs can respond.
We're helping him out.
Coomer drives one into right center field. Long run, Pierre. Pierre dives, misses it. It bounces all the way to the wall.
That's a nice knock for the old hometown boy, isn't it?
Chicago Cubs radio analyst.
What a ball game. The wait is over. Right? It is over. The Cubs are World Series champions. How does that sound, partner?
1999 American League All-Star.
From the American League All-Stars. Infielder Ron Coomer.
The Coom Dog with Mully and Haw.
Woohoo!
On 670 The Score.
Rami Makhlouf and Hub Arkish in for Mully and Haw this morning. And quickly, before we bring in Coom, we should mention, Hub, the Bears just announced at practice their inner team practice with the Bengals this afternoon has been closed to the public due to weather. They will still practice, but they won't be doing it in front of the fans.
Yeah, the Bengals came all the way from Cincinnati, so they're going to practice, but it'll probably be moved indoors because of the weather. There's just not room in there for all the fans. So folks, if you had tickets, I'm sure the Bears will try and make it good to you for another day, but don't make the ride to Soldier Field today. Not Soldier Field, to Alice Hall.
Alice Hall, yeah.
Because the practice will be closed to the public today.
Well, this guy, he plays through all the weather, Hub, and joining us now on the Aturo Hotline is Ron Coomer, your hometown tire. Visit aturo.com. Coom, how are you this morning, my friend?
I am doing good. How are you guys doing today?
Good. That was a tough one last night, though, and their first sweep of the season, which the way this season has gone, Coom, which has not been ideal, hasn't been terrible, but it hasn't been ideal. I was surprised when I heard that little factoid this morning that was the first sweep of the season.
Yeah, Remy, it's a series where you go in, you need wins. Obviously, Cubs need all the wins they can get into, you know, the tournament in October. But you're playing a really good team that had come off a bad stretch, so they are turning it around as we speak, you know, and when you play a good team that had its bad stretch, and now they're back on a roll a little bit, all of a sudden, you know, they're doing every little thing right, and that's what we ran into. You ran into, you know, the best bullpen in baseball, starters doing at least their job through five, and, you know, the Cubs offense had two ball games where, you know, you score one run, you have limited amount of hits, and we've seen that, you know, play out multiple times this season. And, you know, with that being said, you're playing a team that knows how to win. They do all the little things right to win. And when you play teams like that, they figure it out. And that's what they did late in ball games twice.
Ron, first of all, I have to tell you, I was born in Rogers Park. My dad took me to my first Cubs game at Wrigley when I was 4 years old. We've been fanatics and season ticket holders ever since. And I think your radio broadcast is the best in Major League Baseball. Just really love listening to you.
Thanks, Hob. That's really nice. I learned a long time ago, and it's great to talk to you and hear you back on the air, buddy. That's for sure.
Thank you.
But I'll say this. I learned 11 years ago, and way before that when I was playing, how good Pat was. And the first Pat and Ron show was phenomenal, and I would listen even from Minnesota because I would just crack up. Because Ronnie was a friend and Pat was a friend, and, you know, it was one of those things. But I learned when you got a Hall of Fame broadcaster and a great guy, follow in the wake and maybe he'll just drag you on along, you know. But it's really good. We have a great time together. We really do.
Well, this isn't just hometown bias. I mean, you guys are the best. And I keep hoping the Cubs will be too. You know, we're struggling to get there a little bit. But the point I've been trying to make today is that what makes baseball so different from all the other major sports is the 162 games. You go to, you know, basketball or hockey, even they play half. You know, football isn't the same. You can't overreact to these two or three game stretches. And I look at the talent on this roster, and I have seen nothing from Council to suggest that he's not the right guy at manager. I just don't think this team is done yet. I look at the schedule the rest of the way. I mean, it was just 3 days ago that they were on an 8-2 break. I mean, they're still in this. What is it that is holding them up the most? What is the biggest problem you think they have to overcome to still make one more run?
I would say that, first of all, you're 100% right. The baseball schedule is unlike any other professional schedule. It is relentless. And I think when you compare the sports, each sport has its own thing, right? It has its own toughness that you need to be able to compete at this level and sustain it. Baseball's thing, so to speak, is mental toughness to be able to bring it every single day if you're an everyday player for, you know, 6 straight months. And that's just part of it. For 162 days, you get 2-3 days off a month, sometimes 4 days off a month. The biggest issue the Cubs are having this year, to answer your question, Hub, is just simply the offense has had its ups and downs. It has been very inconsistent. This is not an offense that's going to compete with the big bopper teams and hit the balls out of the park like some of the clubs, which is totally fine because this is an athletic club. But you have to be able to do the little things right, whether it be, you know, hitting with runners in scoring position. That has been a real Achilles heel for this team. Whether it be situational hitting, another big issue for this team. And to me, if you don't do those things, you're going to have a real struggle. We saw it in Cleveland. When runs are tough to come by, the situational hitting for Cleveland worked. And that's how they won. To me, the offense has to get much more consistent for the Cubs to be a sustainable winning team and to be a team that could compete in October. With that being said, they have a roster of guys that are talented enough to absolutely compete in October. Can't tell me their roster is way different or worse than the roster in Arizona last year going into the playoffs. You know, they just got hot and they were doing all those little things right.
Talking with Ron Coomer here on Mully and Haw, Hub Arkish and Rami Makhlouf in for Mully and Haw this morning. And when you talk about that lineup, Coom, and you say that there are no big boppers in the middle, and that's okay if you do the little things, but isn't it, and Craig Counsell has not been shy in saying that, you know, the home run is his favorite play in baseball, and he'd like to see a few more of them. It's hard to win in this league, especially in this day and age, without, you know, you just look at the other side of town last night and what the White Sox were up against with Aaron Judge and Juan Soto in the middle of that lineup. Not everybody has that, but just one big power bat in the middle of this lineup would completely change the complexion of this Cubs team, would it not?
Well, I mean, I understand that, you know, everybody likes the home run ball and likes that because it makes it easy. You know, you hit a 3-run homer and you change the complexity of a ball game in one swing of the bat. We all understand that. But that doesn't mean that's the only way you can compete. And that's my take on it. I just feel like if you're going to compete and you don't have that, you've got to do all these other things correct. Does that make it a little more difficult? Sure. Okay, I'll go with that. But, you know, you can't strike out like you have a bopper team and you don't.
Right.
So there's some things that aren't quite adding up there. And this team has had some times where the offense has taken off. The month of April, the wind's blowing in. It comes in to hit home runs, but they scored. And it's the worst weather in all of baseball playing at Wrigley Field in April. So they have the ability to do it. It just hasn't been consistent. The home run ball, I know why Counts loves it because he didn't hit any. Not that he had some guys that had him, and you're like, damn, this is fun, man. You get the 3-run homer, and woohoo! You know, my managing, and I love it, and I'm the same way. You know, as Counts, I we laugh about it, but you know, it's true. And you know, you talk about the old school managers, you know, the Earl Weavers. What do I like? He had a few other words we probably won't use on the air, but I like big guys that hit 3-run homers. You know, and you understand it, but that's not the only way to compete in this league and have a very good offense.
Ron, this isn't a Cubs question, but it is a baseball question. And I'm curious for your opinion on this. I thought last night was bad, but 2 nights ago may have been the worst balls and strikes calls I've ever seen in a game.
Yep.
And they have the technology to get everyone perfect. They're showing it to us on TV. Why don't they just stop letting the home plate umpires call balls and strikes and use the technology and get every single call right?
Well, Hub, I think we're getting close. I really do. There's still a few glitches in this system because the TV people are creating the box that we see right on the monitors and on TV. So that has to be resolved where Major League Baseball does that. And the problem with that box that we see is I don't always think it gets changed from hitter to hitter. So Aaron Judge and Nick Madrigal's strike zone needs to be different, right? Madrigal's 5'6", 5'7". You know, Judge is what, 6'8"? So we still have a little bit of, but with that being said, that shouldn't be a big deal for Major League Baseball. You know, I made a pretty big deal the other night of the pitch Shota didn't get, that the whole ball is in strike zone. I mean, it's just a bad, blatant miss call on a 2-2 pitch. And then he doesn't get the call. Naylor gets a hit and then another hit, and four runs go across the board. And you're just like, oh, this is the inning's over if it's just the normal strike call. And it doesn't happen. And next thing you know, you got to give up four runs. That's our game. And it's been that way for a long time. You know, sometimes the breaks just go against you and it's difficult. But Hub, I think we're close. They're doing it in the minor leagues. And, you know, I think the system has to be figured out a little bit more. And I think we're going to go to it. I really do. I think it'll be within the next few years, you're going to see, you know, automatic strikes.
I should know this, but I don't. And I'm guessing you do. Does the whole ball have to be in the strike zone, or does it have to touch any part of the strike zone?
Just touch that box of any way, shape, or form. So if it hits the very tip of the outside corner, it's a strike. And that's the way it's been. That's why we'd always hear that thing, you know, and I would even ask the umpire, is that as far as it goes? He'd say, yes, that's on the black. Well, if you look at an actual home plate, we don't see that because it's buried in the ground and you just see the edges. But home plate used to have, you know, when it was above ground and you'd see it like in Little League, there was a black trim around the white home plate. That's what we used to call it. Did it hit the black? Yes, it was on the black. So that's that variance, that little, you know, couple inches. But any part of the ball hits the zone, it's a strike.
Talking with Ron Coomer. You can hear him on the call for every Cubs game right here on your home for Cubs baseball, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, Hub Arkish, Rami Makhlouf, in for Mully and Haw this morning. When you talk about those close strike calls and the ones that go against the Cubs, Coom, one of the criticisms, and I was in Milwaukee, that's where I spent most of my career watching Craig Counsell for pretty much his entire tenure. So I'm very used to his demeanor and his even-keeled attitude. Some Cubs fans would like to see him coming charging out of the dugout and sticking up for his guys when a call like that happens, or flipping over a trainer's table in the clubhouse when things aren't going so well. As a player, what is that stuff, or the lack thereof, that fiery type of stuff that some folks would like to see out of a manager, what does it do for a player out there on the field?
Well, it can definitely help at times. But not everybody, that's not everybody's personality. I've played for guys that were fiery, that would get fired up and yell and scream. I remember Rick Dempsey was my manager in AAA and a longtime big league catcher, and he had the fire, and he would get out there. Same thing with Jeff Newman, who was a longtime big league catcher. And I've played for Joe Torre, who, you know, just went out there and reasoned with the umpire somewhat. And then we would come back, and you knew, you know, it was like we had the Godfather on our side, and, you know, he'd come back in the dugout and be a little hot under the collar. Next thing you know, with the Yankees, we'd put up a six spot, and it really didn't matter anymore. Counts is a pretty fiery guy. It's just, he is pretty even keel in the dugout, what you see, right? I mean, but there's fire in there. There's no doubt about that. It's just the way he shows it. I don't think we're ever going to confuse Counts, though, with Coach Ditka, with Mike. you know, we're not going to have those comparisons ever.
You know, looking at this roster, if there was, you know, one position that you think could make a difference in this last month and a half or whatever it may be, if there was one guy that you think maybe you see an explosion about to come, is there anybody you can throw out for us?
Well, I think Dansby Swanson has made some improvements swinging, and they've really missed his consistency. He struggled. He's hitting like 230, and you know, for the Cubs to have big production out of him would have been really good. And if he can do that, that would be phenomenal. But the top of the lineup, you know, Ian got really hot for about a 30-day stretch where he drove in a ton of runs. Someone like that, you know, if Ian and Bellinger – can get hot for this next 40 days, then you've got something going on. But you've got to have some people, you know, really heat up, because you really don't have much room for error with this squad. And, you know, the other issue with the wild card is the Cubs do not hold the the tiebreaker. So that's the other thing. You know, they do not hold the tiebreaker in their possession. They've got to win by more than a game. So you're really, you know, it is what it is. You've got to win. The offense, though, the top of the lineup has to do its job, and you've got to be able to compete and put the ball in play at the bottom of the lineup.
They do have 18 straight games against teams with a losing record. Yep. They have the easiest schedule down the stretch here in all of Major League Baseball. Are you even looking at that? If you're a player, are you even mentioning that? If you're Craig Counsell, or is it just go out and take care of business every day?
I don't know if it's mentioned, but I'll say this. I knew it, and I've known it since spring training. When you look at the Cubs season, you look at your schedule, and I've listened to Hub do this in preseason football. You look at stretches where you go, you know, and how many times for the Bears does everybody try to pick what their record's going to be, and you start going through the schedule. Well, in football, it's easy because you get 17 games. In Major League Baseball, we get 162. It takes you a little longer. But you could look. So when I looked at, like, going into the trade deadline and what you know, could or couldn't do, and then you looked at post-trade deadline from August 1st on or 31st on, you go, wow, this, you know, these teams have had their struggles. Now, if this continues this season like it has in years past, Cubs got a real chance to make some hay in August and September. And now we're seeing it. You know, you're going to play, you know, I think we got three series left. You've got Dodgers, you've got Yankees, and you got the Phillies. So you got three series out of the rest of the season of teams that have a better than 500 record.
That's Ron Coomer. Catch him on the call for every Cubs game along with Pat Hughes right here on your home for Cubs baseball, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, and our guest for the last few minutes on Mully and Haw. Coom, appreciate the time.
Absolutely, guys. I look forward to it, and also look forward to hearing you talk a little bit about the Bears, Hub. It's always great to hear you talk about our Bears. I'm looking forward to it. I watched the first game, and it's great to hear you on the air, buddy.
Thank you very much, Ron, and I hope you have a great rest of the season.
Thanks.
There's Ron Coomer joining us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire. Visit Aturo.com. He gives me hope. He gives me hope when he talks about that stretch of schedule, Hub.
Well, what I love about it is he went to the same place where I always go. You look at the roster, and the Cubs roster is every bit as good as the other teams that they're fighting with for these wild card spots with. And it's just a question of getting hot at the right time. Last year, they got cold at the wrong time. Hopefully this year, they'll get hot at the right time.
Speaking of the Cubs, stay tuned for the Cubs for a Cure Radiothon starting right after Hub and I wrap things up here at 10 o'clock here on The Score. Danny Parkins will host the Radiothon with 100% of the proceeds benefiting cancer research. Listeners will have a chance to donate and win suites to Cubs or Bulls games, autographed memorabilia, and much, much more. That's the Cubs for a Cure Radiothon starting at 10 right here on The Score. Hub Arkish, Rami Makhlouf in for Mully and Haw. I want to go back a couple weeks and talk about what we saw at the Hall of Fame and what we might see in the future at the Hall of Fame as it pertains to your Chicago Bears with Hub Arkish. That's coming up right after this on Chicago Sports.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Radio 670, The Score.
When I was floated on this scene, the professional scene, there was a lot of negativity because people didn't respect the return game. But eventually, they put in this new rule, which called, you guys know, the Devin Hester rule. The rule moved the kickoff up and made it easier for the kickers to kick it out of the end zone, which eliminated me from getting a lot of returns. So I guess you can say the NFL started taking this return game seriously. I hope me being here today opens up the doors and brings some attention to other guys like Brian Mitchell and Josh Cripps, because I'm not the only returner who deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. I'm just the first.
That was Devin Hester a couple weeks ago at Canton at his induction into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. This is Mully and Haw. I'm Rami Makhlouf alongside Hub Arkish. In for those guys this morning, we're taking you right up to 10 o'clock and the Cubs for a Cure Radiothon with Danny Parkins. Listeners have a chance to donate and win suites to Cubs or Bulls games, autographed memorabilia, and much, much more. That was very cool a couple of weeks ago to see those guys, Devin Hester, Steve McMichael, Julius Peppers, get their just due and their flowers, so to speak, for their careers.
Everything about it, great. And I have absolutely nothing negative to say about Devin Hester, but I do have a question.
Which is?
I've been paying attention and listening. I've never heard the new kickoff rule called the Devin Hester rule. Have you? I
think he was talking about the previous rule change where made it easier for touchbacks, not this new format that they have. He's basically saying they changed the rules to take the Devin Hesters of the world out of the game by making touchbacks easier.
I was just wondering about that because I hadn't heard that just now.
What good? I mean, if he wants to put it out there and try to get it started, I'll call it that, Devin. Sure.
That surprised me. I hadn't heard that before.
He deserves it. Yeah, you know what I mean? And they all deserve to go into the Pro Football. I was very happy to see Mongo go in. I know you, of course, had experiences with Mongo in your time covering the team.
Oh, Mongo deserved it. Oh. I mean, I couldn't believe when it was in the normal years. It was just because there are so many other Bears. There are more Bears in the Hall of Fame than any other team. And
many from that one particular team.
Well, and also his accomplishments were downgraded because of the Hall of Fame accomplishments of both Dan Hampton and the pass rush to the defensive end. That's why it took so long. But there's nobody in the Hall that's more deserving than Mongo. I mean, he is a Hall of Famer, no question about it.
And a Hall of Fame person. I said I was on the day after that, and I said, I grew up watching him, and I loved him growing up. But then when I became a producer early on in my radio career in Milwaukee, he was – whenever the Bears and Packers would play, for whatever reason, I got his number, and he was always willing to come on and talk Bears and Packers. And every time I talked to him, it was like I was his best friend. Like, yeah, buddy, yeah, baby, let's do this. And he was just that type of dude.
Well, and I have to tell our listeners, because you may not know this, you know his history. You know the way he acted, the way he carried himself. Off the field, away from football, Ming is a really good human being. Mm-hmm. I mean, really good person, really good. We're not best friends, but I mean, he's been a really good friend and he finally now is in, and hopefully he has, I don't know what his situation is, but hopefully he has some good years
left. And he has some peace, and he can appreciate the moment that it was. But when I see that, when I see McMichael and Devin Hester and then Julius Peppers, three guys who wore the Bears uniform go in, I start to wonder, and you're the perfect guy to ask this with your history covering this team, of who's the next guy to go in as a Bear. Nobody goes in as their team. They don't wear the helmets and the bust like they do in Major League Baseball with the Caps. But who do you think is the next guy to get that Hall of Fame push that played the majority of their careers for the Chicago Bears?
Well, I'm forgetting his name at the moment, but it's the other offensive tackle who played on the right side. I can't, but I think he's the next.
Okay.
Our listeners, I'm sure, know who I'm talking about. I'll get it.
Keith Van Horn?
Yes.
Thank you, Dustin Rose. Thank you.
And not Jay Hilgenberg.
Actually, it is Hilgenberg. Hilgenberg is who I was thinking of. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's the name I've heard.
Yeah. Seven-time Pro Bowler. I mean, and again, a member of the 80. Yeah, no, I think he's probably the next. But it'll have to be through the senior, deal again.
Yeah, and it is tough, man, when you're on a team with that many great players that you do kind of get overshadowed. And Jay Hilgenberg probably has been overshadowed by the guys that have already gotten in. That's why it took Mongo so long to get in. Is there anybody, I know this is a stretch, but is there anybody on this current Bears team that you look at and you go, maybe one day, maybe they're, I said on Sunday, let's fit Caleb Williams for the gold jacket after the preseason, after his preseason debut. But that was probably a little bit hyperbolic and crazy. But is there anybody on this current team where you go, yeah, maybe he gets fitted for a gold jacket someday?
Well, it's unfair. He'll go in the Peppers category, but Keenan Allen, certainly is close already. And I think if DJ Moore piles up a couple more years of numbers like the last few years, he will be in the talk. Beyond that, I look at the defense, they're all still too young. But I think that those are probably, the two best guys.
Dustin, can you come up with anybody past or present on the Chicago Bears who you think could get that gold jacket?
Well, I think Hilgenberg definitely has to be talked about. If you're talking about Hilgenberg, then I think you also have to talk about our partner, Olin Krutz.
Our teammates. Yes, right? Yes. That's a
great one.
Now, Lance Briggs has been brought up. Again, now, Briggs, and also like Urlacher, not a very popular opinion, but I am Urlacher is a Hall of Famer, but not a first ballot Hall of Famer. Personally, he's nowhere in my, again, you asked my opinion, nowhere near Ray Lewis. Ray Lewis is here. Urlacher is a step down. They are both not, if you're putting them in, they are not equals. So they should not both be first ballot Hall of Famers. Lance Briggs was a tackling machine, but that's what he was supposed to do in that offense. That's also the argument against Mike Singletary. There are some that think Mike Singletary doesn't belong because of the great defensive line in front of him. He never basically took on an offensive lineman. He was a tackling machine.
Well, you know, guys, at the end of the day, and I've been doing this a long time, that was the best defense of all time, or at least in the modern era of the game. I mean, for one season, that was the best defense I've ever seen. And when you look at how many of those guys are already in the Hall of Fame, you can only put so many in, you know? And so I think the Bears are just, this is going to sound funny to Bears fans, they're struggling with this right now for being too good because they've got so many guys in and you can't just keep putting more. I mean, three Bears, Julius Peppers, I see as a Bear. Now, I understand he didn't spend the majority of his career there, but and there's just so many guys we can talk about as options that it's going to take a while for some of these guys who deserve it to finally make
it. I actually said I was at the Hall of Fame 5 or 6 weeks ago. I was in Canton, and they have the mannequins of all the inductees that are coming in with the full uniform and everything. And they had a Julius Peppers Bears uniform. And even as a lifelong Bears fan, and I watched every snap that he played for the Bears, and I love Julius Peppers, and he was great for this team. When I saw that, I was like, huh. I always thought of him as a Panther. You know, even as a Bears fan, I thought that. But you're saying you remember him as a Bear, that if you were going to put a helmet on his bust in Canton, it would be a Bears helmet that you would put him in.
Yeah, well, and what he shares with Ming is playing for the Packers, which, you know, kind of ticks me off. I'm just kidding.
Can I throw a name in there that I don't think, and you guys might roll your eyes, Brandon, Dustin, Hub, tell me if I'm crazy when I say this. I think Peanut Tillman deserves some consideration, when not just on the raw numbers, but like we talk about with Steve McMichael, a lot of the raw numbers were impressive, but his impact on games that wouldn't show up in a box score, I think, was great. When you talk about the peanut punch and something that guys are doing around the league now, that's become kind of the norm. I don't know if anybody's doing it as well as Peanut Tillman, but the amount of turnovers that guy created, the way he shut down a whole side of the field and would take on a Randy Moss or a Calvin Johnson week in, week out playing in this division. Peanut Tillman, I think in Chicago, everybody appreciates what he did and how good he was. When you talk about Hall of Fame voters and the perception nationally, I don't know that Peanut Tillman is in the discussion as much as he maybe should be.
Well, and the reason is because he's better known for the peanut punch than he is for his play as a defensive back. But again, much like Ming, I think once people start talking more about it, he eventually probably will get in for that reason, because the peanut punch changed the way defenses are played in the NFL.
Yeah.
And that is not a requirement, but it is something that gets guys into the Hall of Fame, and that's a very good call. I think there's a good chance that he could be one of the next ones.
And a texter, also to reinforce what you said, Rami, Tillman has 82 interceptions and forced fumbles combined. That ranks third in NFL history, if you're not cheating, behind Charles Woodson and Rod Woodson. So you're talking about two, like, you know, when you hear those two names, those are instant Hall of Famers. And I think that's a big thing about the Hall of Fame. When you hear the name, as soon as you go, they're not a Hall of Famer to me. Like, it's got to be like, boom, instantly to be a Hall of Famer. There's too many people. There's too many Bears. There's too many people in all the Hall of Fames.
And that's part of the problem, is that Mongo, you know, was an automatic in Chicago, but not in the other 31 cities. They'd be because of all the credit
guys,
that went to the rest of the team.
Right.
And I think that's what Tillman has struggled with. So
this texter from the 630 says Khalil Mack.
Yeah.
He's a Hall of Famer, right? That's he's a lock, no?
But see, if you're watching on Twitch, as soon as Hub was like, I did the same thing. I made the same face Hub made. As a Bears fan, God, he took a lot of plays off to me. He was a lot of time, you know, and he has, oh my goodness, God-given ability. But if you were just looking at his time with the Bears, no.
Guys, what we have to remember is I think there are 347 players in the Hall of Fame now, and there have been over 35,000 players in the NFL. And so it's a really select group. And there's a lot of guys we can mention who are worthy of consideration. But the difference between being worthy of consideration and getting in is a big number, and that's where we struggle.
Dustin was talking about Brian Urlacher and first ballot, second ballot. I don't get caught up in all that. Like, it all depends on who else is on the ballot with you in terms of whether you're going to get in on the first or on the second. And to me, and I do agree with you, Dustin, when you say, like, I look at a guy and I go, yeah, that's a Hall of Famer. And then there are other guys where I go, I need to hear more before I make that decision. Brian Urlacher is a Hall of Famer when I watch him. If you want to get caught up in first ballot, second ballot, fine, but that dude is a Hall of Fame football player.
Yeah, there are very few, I think, qualified first ballot guys. But when you dominate your position the way Urlacher did, he is a legitimate first ballot. There was never any question about it. And by the way, I think Singletary is too. And I always thought Mike was a little overrated, but he's still a Hall of Famer. There's no question he was a great, great linebacker.
And I'm not putting the Urlacher defense in the same class as the 85 Bears defense, but we might, when you talk about Briggs and you talk about Peanut Tillman and some of the other guys that were on that team, it might get to the point where Hall of Fame voters are looking at it and going, how many guys are we going to put in on this defense? You know what I mean?
And I think where Singletary struggles with the credit that he gets is how many other linebackers have had three Hall of Famers playing in front of him on the defensive line.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so hard with that Bears defense to decide which ones. I'm not sure the other two linebackers shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame too.
Yep, absolutely.
And that's part of my point also, though, with Urlacher. When Urlacher was at his best, who were the two guys in front of him? Do you remember?
Ted Washington and Keith Tracker
Trailer. Keith Trailer, right. Yeah. He never got touched. There was never a center or a guard that got out on him, and he did his job. I'm getting, messed with on the text line. Tackling machine, he was. His numbers are off the chart. But if you put Brian Urlacher in Jacksonville, is he a Hall of Fame middle linebacker?
I think he is, but we'll never know.
We'll never know, right? Yeah. I mean, remember, also, being the middle linebacker of the Chicago Bears also gets you ahead of the game. It's like a preseason top 25 rating in college football. You are automatically a top five. You play middle linebacker for the team that created the position, you're all of a sudden an upper echelon immediately. You've got a leg up.
It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. We do got to get to a break. More Bears Talk with Patrick Finley coming up at 9:20 and throughout the morning as Hub and I are here with you, filling in for Mully and Haw until 10 o'clock and taking you right up to the Cubs for a Cure Radiothon starting at 10 right here on The Score with Danny Parkins, hosting 24 hours and 100% of the proceeds benefiting cancer research. Listeners will have a chance to donate and win suites to Cubs or Bulls games, autographed memorabilia, and much more. Much more. We'll talk some Cubs and White Sox with Bruce Levine coming up next. He's Hub Arkish. I'm Rami Makhlouf. We're in for Mullion Hall right here on 670 The Score.
Baseball. Bruce Levine.
It's great to talk some baseball.
Score Baseball Insider, covering the Cubs and White Sox for more than 30 years.
Bruce Levine is a newsbreaker.
Inside the Clubhouse co-host, alongside our own David Haw.
We've got a lot of baseball conversation to cover.
Great being with you, talking baseball.
Bruce Levine.
That's a really good question, Bruce.
See, Bruce has the first hard question.
With Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw out this morning. Rami Makhlouf, Hub Arkish in for those guys. I was remiss in last segment when telling folks that Bears training camp was closed to the public today. That constitutes as breaking news. And breaking news on 670 Score is presented by BetQL. Smarter bets with BetQL. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. As you heard Big Voice Guy saying, joining us now on the Aturo Hotline is Bruce Levine. Your hometown tire visit, Aturo.com. Bruce, how are you this morning, my friend?
Good morning, guys. Yeah, I'm okay. Chicago baseball has had better days, but would you like to talk about the Cubs and their possibilities of making a playoff push the last 40 games, or the White Sox and having their best attendance the last five games, if that could keep up going into next year or not?
We certainly have time to touch on both, but let's start with the Cubs. Was that the first sweep of the season? Was that, in your mind, Bruce, maybe the nail in the coffin in any playoff hopes, or does this soft schedule down the stretch still leave hope alive?
Well, I went to Chicago Public Schools, so I did the math here, okay? and the math, both guys, the math will tell you that for the Cubs to win 84 games, they need to go 26-14 the rest of the way. That would be interesting, but the third wild card, which is the only really spot they have a possibility at, right now they're 7 games behind Atlanta in the loss column. Atlanta would have to go 19-21 because Atlanta has the tiebreaker against the Cubs, like all the teams who are above them in a playoff type of situation are. So with that in mind, the Cubs are going to have to play their best baseball of the year. They were doing it up until the time they met the Guardians, and they're going to have to recalibrate here, try to do that again against Toronto and Detroit at home here over the next 6 games.
You know, Bruce, I guess what I focused on the last couple of days is the point you just made. They were 8-2, and then they run into Cleveland. But in two of those, the first two of those 3 games, they were right there with 2 outs in the 9th inning. They needed a run, you know, or 2 runs to win the game. That's going to happen. And yet, as Cubs fans do in Chicago, immediately they go south and it's over. No, 40 games, you know, you put together a little 4 or 5 game win streak and suddenly you're right back in the middle of it. But the question is, which of these players is going to be the difference maker? Because it hasn't been the big guys. It hasn't been Bellinger. It hasn't been Swanson. It hasn't been Horner. Who are you looking for to really come on these last 40 games?
So, Hub, it's going to take more than a 4 game streak at this point. Okay, so you know, to go 26-14, you're going to have to really start playing good baseball all the way. And they were until you ran into Cleveland. And you hit upon a point which is key, and that is they don't have star players. They have good players. The Cubs have good players. Bellinger is a good player. Swanson's a good player. They do not have stars. So they don't have a Judge. They don't have a Soto. They don't have what you consider right now, and you asked about it. They don't have a difference maker, okay? It's not their fault, okay? They have a good team, but it's an average team offensively because it's missing the heavier hitters. And that is something that's, you know, impacted them most of the year. The pitching has been really good. The starting pitching, for the most part, is a playoff contending team that could go in the playoffs and surprise people. The bullpen has been coming on and has done a great job since the end of June, being the top 3 bullpens in the game. The problem is the average run scores and the ability to get the big hits, and that just hasn't been there.
And that just goes back to the lack of a power bat, right, Bruce? I was saying this to Ron Coomer earlier. It's good to have a lineup that's well-rounded and guys that can get on base, but one guy in the middle of a lineup, like, I mean, the Yankees have 2 of them in Juan Soto and Aaron Judge, but just one guy like that completely changes the complexion of a lineup and how a pitcher attacks the guys around that difference maker in the middle of a given lineup.
Right, and, the money was spent, you know, you have $30 million in Bellinger, you have $25 million at shortstop, you have $20 million in left, you have $18 million in right. Okay, so the money was spent on, these are good players, okay? Mm-hmm. Defensively, they're good, you know. Offensively, they're above average, but they're not the difference makers in the middle of the lineup that you talk about. So it's not as simple as all that. The Cubs were 6th in baseball last year in runs scored. This year, they've been languishing in the 20s. So that has been a big difference. You have not seen the slug out of them that they need. It's been a nice progression at first base with Michael Busch. Amaya is starting to hit the ball better at catcher. But again, we're talking about Cubs being one of those average teams with 7 or 8 others in the National League that are average. So, you know, the offseason, via trade or via free agency, you know, the Cubs are going to have to address getting a little bit more slug in their lineup.
Bruce, you know, last year they had 3 All-Stars, and this year none of them were All-Stars. And you know, Jed Hoyer had to know what he thought he needed to do to improve this team during the off season. what we can't explain is why guys who have hit like very good players are not hitting this year. What's your observation of the job Craig Counsell has done so far?
Well, I think he's done as well as possible. You know, he doesn't take a bat out there to each game. He doesn't swing the bat or play in the field. I just think that, look, Hoyer did a nice job of bringing in Imanaga, who's going to be in the rookie of the year conversation, should be in the Cy Young conversation. He's been that good. And the trade he made for Bush was a really good one. So it's not like he sat on his hands in the offseason and didn't do anything. The only thing that he and his front office are going to have to look at is the fact that they might have overrated their offense, and they thought that they would get enough slug out of Bellinger, enough slug out of Suzuki, enough slug out of Happ, and certainly the lack of slug from Swanson has been, you know, surprising to him and to them as well. And those things all add up to a lot of games where you score one run and you just come up short in that department. So with that in mind, you know, again, we're kind of beating a dead horse here. I think everybody knows they need more offense going into next year. This year isn't over. What they have to do is go on a terrific run, play 700 baseball the rest of the way to be considered a factor in the last wild card. The other two wild cards are gone, okay? They're 10 games behind San Diego. They're 10 games behind Arizona in the loss column with 40 left. So that's not going to happen. They're 9 games behind the Brewers. That's not going to happen. So what you can hope for is a good run of baseball by the Cubs the last 40 games and get into that last wild card. As we know, last wild card sometimes equals, like last year, Arizona going to the World Series.
Bruce, I said we'd have time for the Cubs and the Sox. I lied. Brendan Fryer is giving me the break sign. But next time for sure, Bruce. I do appreciate the time and the insight, of course, Bruce Levine. And check him out on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. And he joins me on the Aturo Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire. Visit Aturo.com. Back to some Bears talk right after this, including Patrick Finley at 9:20. But right after the break, I was ready to fit Caleb Williams for a gold jacket after his preseason debut. What did Hub take away from that debut? We'll discuss coming up right after this.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.